From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. Welcome to the day after the 2018 midterm elections. It was a night of many firsts, including those long lines of voters. Ken Rudin, the political junkie, joined us through the long night last night. We're continuing that conversation today. There is always some clarity the morning after. I'd like to know, Ken, what you think the headline is as we begin this morning.
Well, the headline has to be that the Democrats took control of the House. I mean, obviously, we've had one-party rule since Donald Trump was elected in 2016. There's been really no check on his presidency. And the fact that the Democrats, at least as of we're talking right now, picked up maybe 27 seats or so, far more than the 23 they needed to get the majority. That's the big headline. But at the same time, it's not the worst day in the world or the worst election in the world for the Republican Party, even though, you know, a president usually does very poorly in the first midterm. The Republicans did pick up a bunch of Senate seats, perhaps more than most people thought. You know, they knocked off incumbents in Indiana and North Dakota and Florida and Missouri. So that was good for the Republican Party. And while they, you know, they didn't do great in some governor's races, they won some big seats as well in Georgia, in Florida, in Ohio. Matter of fact, there was so much attention on the so-called darlings of the Democratic Party, the Beto O'Rourke's in Texas, Stacey Abrams in Georgia, and Andrew Gillum in Florida. And as of now, it seems like all three have lost. So the headline is the House. A mixed bag all in all.
I'm not sure that that result is final in Georgia yet, just because there's talk of a recount or some conditional ballots that still need to be counted.
That is absolutely correct. And of course, if Brian Kemp, the Republican who is currently leading, if he falls, even if he has a lead, if he falls under 50%, Georgia law calls for a runoff between the top two candidates. So we may not have heard the end of Georgia as of yet.
So in his remarks this morning, President Trump said the blue wave, I don't know if there ever was such a thing, but he touted this largest Senate gain for a president's party in midterm elections since I think he went back to 1962. And he's placing a lot of emphasis on the tremendous victory, not only in the congressional seats, but in the governor's races as well. I do want to step back a little bit and say, what's the glass half full, but also the glass half empty view for President Trump in this election?
Well, I think the things that stuck most with me with Trump in this morning's press conference, first of all, he listed the Republicans who lost in the House by name of those who didn't embrace the Trump presidency or the Trump philosophy. And he named a bunch of them, Barbara Comstock of Virginia, Mike Kaufman of Colorado, others like that, Mia Love of Utah. And basically he said, well, they rejected me. They didn't embrace me. And so they lost. So I thought it was kind of odd that he would name the Republicans.
Right.
That was kind of strange. And then he also said that, you know, in the races for governor, you can't get bigger than Florida, Iowa, Ohio, and Georgia. He said, these are big states. You can't get bigger than that. But of course, he didn't mention that the Republicans lost bigger states in Michigan and Illinois. But I mean, that's part of it as well. But I just kind of think, though, that for the most part, it is a mixed bag. I think, you know, the president sees it. We'll see almost everything is a victory. I think a big question is also, where do we go from here? Because now that the Democrats have subpoena power, investigative power, and other things like that in the House, does the president reach out to Nancy Pelosi, should she be the speaker, or whoever heads up the Democrats? Or does he become even more combative for the next 2 years? My guess, it's the latter.
In a tweet this morning, the president wrote, in all fairness, Nancy Pelosi deserves to be chosen Speaker of the House by the Democrats. If they give her a hard time, perhaps we will add some Republican votes. She has earned this great honor, exclamation point, to which a lot of people say, oh, he's just getting ready for this rivalry.
Oh, that's exactly right. This is vintage Trump because he knows that many of the candidates, I don't know how what percentage, but a good number of Democrats who were elected to the House yesterday did so by promising they would not support Nancy Pelosi for speaker. She's 78 years old. Many Democrats have talked about new and younger leadership, and that is, you know, that's even among some of Nancy Pelosi's supporters. So maybe Trump is playing games with the Democrats. I suspect that's what he's doing. But one thing that can't be denied, it was a great night for women. Seems like we may have 100 female members of the House, which of course would be an all-time record. The turnout among both parties are very large. And one thing Trump said that I think I agree with, that for all the talk about a blue wave, and I'm not sure how realistic the talk of a blue wave was, the Kavanaugh hearings did change something, some kind of a dynamic, at least in the Senate races. I think it inspired and energized Republicans in these red states, in North Dakota, in Missouri, in states like that, West Virginia, where basically the treatment of Kavanaugh, the alleged mistreatment of Kavanaugh by the Democrats, did infuriate Republicans, and Trump and the GOP candidates took advantage of it.
You're listening to Ken Rudin, the political junkie, extending last night's coverage with us into today in our special extended episode of Insight. So, Ken, there were remarkable firsts in this country, and I think the number of women in politics, the number of women that were elected, is joined by the diversity of people in general who were elected to offices across the country. And you were talking through the night with Colorado Public Radio, and Colorado added part of that storyline.
That's absolutely true. Jared Polis who's a member of the Congress, a member of the House. He was elected governor, Democrat elected governor of Colorado, the first openly gay governor of any state in the country. Christy Noem, also a member of Congress from South Dakota, becomes the first female governor of South Dakota. Both Michigan and Minnesota elected Muslim American women to Congress. That's the first time that ever happened. And so, you know, there are a lot of things that, you know, a lot of surprises. Democrats won a red seat in Oklahoma. Two Republican congressmen lost in Texas. There's just been a lot of surprises. And even Mark Sanford's seat in South Carolina, he was defeated in the Republican primary by a Republican who said he wasn't pro-Trump enough. Very conservative district. A Democrat won that seat. So, you know, we're still kind of seeping, you know, going through the results and trying to, you know, understand what exactly happened. But there are some things that, you know, that we were still surprised about. And that's what makes politics such a delicious, it's not even a game, but a delicious thing to watch, is because when you think you know everything, it's clear that you don't. And many of the results that came last night were completely unexpected.
Republicans still have about 2/3 of the governor's offices across the country, but the Democrats did win governor's races from Republicans in Illinois, Kansas, Maine, Michigan, Nevada, which we haven't talked about yet, New Mexico, and Wisconsin. How about Wisconsin, Ken?
That was a big one because Scott Walker is a conservative darling. There was an attempted recall against him in 2012, funded and supported by the labor unions in Wisconsin. He beat that back. He was once upon a time, this sounds like a million years ago, he was once upon a time the front runner for the Republican presidential nomination. That's how silly calling front runners in advance is. But he was, you know, he was very well respected among conservatives. It was a very high profile defeat for him, and he lost in Wisconsin. So I think right now, I think the Republicans are now down to about 25 or 26 governors out of the 50. They still have a majority, but the Democrats certainly picked up a bunch.
Let's talk about the Nevada races, because as you and I have talked about this election overall, we both thought there would be more attention on Nevada. And the party in power has shifted there greatly, but it didn't come as much on the national stage as either you or I expected.
You know, I'm surprised. I agree with you completely. I'm surprised at that because we knew from the beginning that Dean Heller was the only Republican running for re-election in a state that was won by Hillary Clinton. So that was a risk to him to the beginning. And remember, when he started out this campaign, he was a non-Trump Republican, an anti-Trump Republican. He had questions about the tax bill and the tax cuts and things like that. He had questions about repealing the Affordable Care Act. And matter of fact, Danny Tarkanian, who was planning to run against him because there were a lot of conservatives who didn't like Heller. Heller then changed his mind, said, "I will embrace the Trump agenda." Tarkanian dropped out of that Senate race. So there were Democrats who didn't like Heller because he moved closer to Trump, and there were Republicans who didn't like Heller because he was separating himself from the president from the beginning. The combination of the two of them gave Jackie Rosen, the member of Congress from Nevada, the Democrat, an opportunity to beat him, and she did. So I'm surprised it wasn't. It was a great victory for the Democrats because in the Senate, I think she's the only Democrat who picked up a Republican seat all night long. It was mostly a Republican night for the Senate. And in the gubernatorial race as well, the name Laxalt, Adam Laxalt is the grandson of Paul Laxalt, a beloved figure in Republican politics. But Adam Laxalt, he made a lot of missteps and he said some incendiary things about women and abortion and things like that. And it was a close race, but you still have the first Democratic governor, Steve Sisolak, for the first time in, 16 years,
yeah,
something like that. And so it's now one of the few states in the country that has, I think it's the total is 14, but it's one of the few states that happened last night where the Democrats won control of not only the governorship, but both houses of the state legislature. That happened to Colorado as well and New York as well. And so that's good news for the Democrats in an election where there was not that much good news for the Democrats outside winning the House.
All right. One more point we have to cover, and that is that California's House races did not become the tipping point that we thought they would on election night. The races ended up being close, and some of the districts did move. It just didn't end up being a card in the shift of power, at least in the front of the deck, right?
Yep, I agree with you. I'm surprised at that, too. When you and I have been talking for 2 years, basically looking at all those 5, 6, 7 Republican-held seats that were won by Hillary Clinton in 2016, and we thought that if there was going to be a blue wave in the House, it was going to start or at least end in California. And right now, as we're speaking, only Dana Rohrabacher in the 48th District is trailing, and Darrell Issa's seat in the 49th also may go to the Democrats. But other seats, other Republicans like Jeff Denham, Ed Royce's seat, Mimi Walters, even Duncan Hunter in San Diego, who's under indictment, for goodness sakes, all seem to have won. The only other Republican who's in trouble is Steve Knight, I think, in the 25th District, which is just north of Los Angeles. So Steve Knight could lose, Rohrabacher could lose, and Darrell Issa's seat could go to the Democrats. But once upon a time, we thought there would be more Democratic pickups in the Golden State.
The way you're describing it, Ken, is the way that we're reporting it on our website, which we track AP results. And we're saying those results are with 100% of the precincts reporting, at least with Katie Hill over Steve Knight. And at this point with Harley Ruda over Dana Rohrabacher, too. So the Jeff Denham race as well, 100% of precincts reporting with Jeff Denham beating Josh Harder. So there's much more analysis to come. But all in all, I think as soon as we wrapped up last night, the reality was that the 2020 race seemed to have already begun, right?
Oh, there's no question about that. Already they're talking about, well, you know something? I thought that Amy Klobuchar did really well in Minnesota. Yeah, but Beto O'Rourke, even though he lost, maybe he should run for president. I mean, yeah. I think we deserve a breather. I think you and I and everybody who's inundated with politics 24/7 deserve maybe a breath or two. So maybe on, let's say Thursday, we'll pick it up again.
Okay, Ken. Thanks a lot. Rest up. I appreciate all the work you did with us through this week and all through last night. It's always great to have you as part of the team.
Thank you, Beth. I'm proud to be part of your team.
That was Ken Rudin, the political junkie. Of course, we talk every week on Capital Public Radio. Ken joins us from Washington, D.C. There's more election coverage and results at capradio.org. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio.